I will tweet this out, but it is the most spectacular setting for the Chirp podcast. This episode, we catch up with Bruce Cassidy, coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, in Manhattan, Hudson Yards, on the shores of the Hudson. Spectacular views, fire going, my bike buddy, Bruce Cassidy, and we cover everything. It's all next on The Chirp with Darren Millard. This is awesome.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Hit him up. Yeah, nice hit. That's solid.
Heads up! Oh, how'd that feel, old man? I'm going to run you. I'm just waiting for my shift.
Yes, it is a fireside chat. Do you like what I've done for this setup?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I feel like Roosevelt.
Yeah. We did some hard research on
or
setting
Churchill.
Up. Churchill, whatever it is. Can you believe that I got to fly you across the country to hang out with you?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's
we should find some time out west.
We should. What do you do if you have a couple of minutes off back home? How does Bruce chill?
Well, listen, I love golfing, but I have not played, I'll admit, since September. It's usually a kids' activity. I'm running to baseball. I'm running to hockey. It used to be field hockey for my daughter. Like to read.
Mm.
I like to get out on my bike, like outdoors.
A road bike?
Yeah, it's kind of the hybrid type of... So it's not like the trails, but if you hit one, it's not the end of the world.
Gravel bike?
It's not a racing bike.
Okay.
So a good an hour ride, I think. Red Rock, I've been told to get over there.
You
so,
got to do that.
Again, all things, I'm getting soft since I've been there. So like 50 degrees is cold now. So I'm waiting for a six in front of it to golf and ride my bike.
I bike. I've had a couple of challenges going over the handlebars, a couple of incidents. But I would love to get out, do Red Rock with you.
Now, do you have a time guy that has to race by everybody?
No,
to me,
no,
I'm
no,
more
no.
Of a, you know, fake hip, fake knee type of guy. So a nice pace. Yeah. Enjoy the scenery.
I've
still got a workout, right?
Yeah.
But not. You know.
I have everything but the bell and the basket on my bike. So,
I was going to say I'm not out there with my dog and the basket guy, but I'm moving. And I have the shorts and I have the shirt, the colored shirt, so I look like I'm, you know, from France or Italy, but I'm not.
Yeah.
So,
just enough to make my wife make fun of me. That's what I have.
Yeah. Okay.
Just do that. How you enjoyed the transition from the East to the West?
Well, it's certainly different in terms of the pace of life. I've enjoyed the no traffic, the no constant horns, and that part of it. The sunshine every day, even though it's not, like I said, as hot as me. I guess I thought it was hot almost, though, when I got
it's
here.
It's been a cold
winter. It
was
110 winter. Degrees in August. I thought, it's going to be 80 in January.
Yeah.
But it hasn't worked out that way. So I didn't know. I was thinking more Florida, I guess. But... so that part is, you know, great. You get up in the morning, you let the dog out. You don't need to put a jacket on, right? Freeze. Mm. So that part's nice. You know, other than that, you know, I almost got right into work. So, you know, to say I love the restaurants or the strip or this or that, I just haven't spent a ton of time doing that. So a couple of shows with the family. They're nice to do. You can do those in Boston too, I guess, different type of shows. So, but I'm trying to take advantage of more culture than maybe I did in Boston because you get caught up in work.
Have you had many visitors yet?
My daughter has. She's had three different of her best friends from school have all come.
Oh, wow.
Which has been really good for her. She's 13, so I think the adjustment has really helped her. Parents came. One of the parents came over the New Year's holiday. Good to see them. Mm. But no family yet. My brother was going to come and realized it was American Thanksgiving. And is picking another time now.
Yeah.
So not a ton, but that's a little bit by design, Darren. We don't want people coming and going. Well, it's hard to take
care
of.
Now, do you say no, or who says no?
Julie's as much as me. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because she's, you know, we're pretty independent that way. Like when we travel, like I know when, you know, we try to look after ourselves and not be a burden too, so maybe that's what we're trying to get the message across, that, you know, we have a life and we're always running to a hockey rink or a school and after school sports, so we're not the best right now to be like touristy people. Maybe when the year's over and school's over, it'd be a lot easier to do that.
I like the people that say I might be coming to Vegas in February.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then I say, well, there's lots of hotels.
Yeah, there's a million people that say that.
Yeah.
Oh, see, you're playing the Islanders in February, whatever, something like that. I'll be at the game, and I don't have my tickets yet, but, you know, just letting you know. You know.
I don't mind buying them.
I haven't made the hotel reservation. You know what I mean? And I hear there's good golf. It's all that. Okay, so what do you want? You want golf? You want to stay at my house? You want to use my clubs? You need my tickets? I got a bike, too, that I don't use apparently now. So I get a lot of that. But most of those people have come and stayed in hotels and have been pretty good. Just say, hey, I'll meet you after the game if you can. And I don't go out after games very often. You're always back to work the next day, so that's tough. So I don't even see them.
Are you a workaholic?
In the winter, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's partly necessary. I think there's always the next game, the next opponent. And some coaches are wired a different way. They don't do a lot of video. It's all relationship building. And I tend to watch the game from start to finish before, you know, we get on the ice the next day, or as much of it as I can. Go over it with the guys. So I'm like a tech guy that way, right? I like to dive into the game and you got to find a balance. That's the one thing I'm learning. You got to get out in the room, and you know. So I've always known that and done that, but I always gravitate towards the work first. So I'll even do it at night sometimes after the game, get home, crack it open, because I want to spend time with the players in the morning. So yeah, in the winter I think I would describe myself as that for sure.
Do you watch the game from start to finish seamlessly, or are you always stopping, looking at again?
No, we'll make clips.
Okay.
So we'll stop and starting. I mean, you can make anywhere from, if it's a quick night, like 30 clips to maybe 75, right? Depending on if you're going to have a teaching day the next day. I might not watch it all in a row, because I think it takes a good hour to get through each period. So I'm not staying up till 4 in the morning to watch it, but I might, you know, hammer the first period, get up early and do the rest. I'll even take it to my kids' practice. I'll have my computer open to prep for, you know, for example, they have a lot of practices on Thursday night. If we played Friday, I'd have my power play meeting, looking through it, or their previous game, you know, tendencies. And while I'm watching practice, I just find that, I think coaches will all tell you, they don't want to be left unprepared ever with anything. So you probably overdo it a little bit, to be quite honest with you.
Players can smell that too, right? Can't they?
Yeah, I mean, they know. And then so sometimes you got to talk to them. How much information's enough? Meetings. I've really learned over the years to really pare down the meetings. So you're doing a lot of work, spending a lot of time on maybe 2-3 minutes of video. That's an 8-minute meeting or something. So, but you hope it helps, right? I mean, that's what we're doing. So
you have a whole new staff this year compared to what you've had in the past. What was that adjustment like?
Yeah, that's probably been one of the bigger ones too. A whole new dressing room.
Yeah.
There's not very many guys that I can even think of the top of my head that I've ever coached in that room.
Was there any?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
I'm trying to think if over the years anybody came through Boston. Who did they take from Boston? Colin Miller? Is that who the Knights took? And then he's in Dallas now. So, and then the staff, John, I played hockey against in junior, so I knew his reputation as a hard-nosed player, knew him as a coach, coaching against him, but had never worked with him, never worked with Ryan Craig. Had met Ryan years ago once, but knew he, you know, most recently retired. It's good to have a guy like that on the staff. I think that's young. And then Misha I'd met through Hockey Canada last year. So really a lot of newness. The guys I knew the most, oddly enough, were the equipment managers. I had given Chris his first job in Grand Rapids, better known as Critter.
Yeah.
as a you know, an assistant equipment guy. I mean, the guy that hired him was our head guy. He came, but I certainly okayed it. And then JW we had in Providence, Aiken. So I knew them the best. And I don't know if you knew this about Mike Muir, one of our medical guys. I played baseball with him in Ottawa when I was 15 years old. Isn't that a small world?
That is ridiculously small.
Yeah. I had no idea he was even in the business. And he was working in Manchester a number of years ago, and I was in Providence. I looked over and I said, that looks like Mike Muir. He's the guy that used to throw the ball in the dirt to me all the time at first base. I lost more teeth playing baseball than I did playing hockey. And sure enough, it was him, so we caught up, and here he is. So he's been a good resource for me, too, to sort of get to know the city and things like that when I first got here.
Were you a good ball player?
I was okay. I was a first baseman that wasn't a great hitter, so you knew right there was an ending. It was going to be a quick ending. But I was a good team guy. I was a good fielding first baseman, if that makes any sense. I pitched a little when I was young, but I broke my elbow playing hockey at 14, so it kind of made it harder. But I wasn't going to be a high-end baseball player, but I loved the game.
What would the Bruce Cassidy, as a first-round pick turning pro, tell the Bruce Cassidy today? We always talk about the other way. Like, what would you tell yourself way back when?
Back in time at 18, telling myself now.
Or any reminder or anything that you've...
I think I would tell myself now to understand how naive those players are at that age. They really don't know a lot about the game, about life, about adulthood, all that stuff. So make sure that they don't need another father necessary, but you need to have some of those qualities in your messaging. You just do. Mm-hmm. And I've coached a lot of young guys, so I think I've done a really good job with that. I cut my teeth in the minors, so I was always dealing with 19, 20, 21-year-olds. So I understand that part. It's merging that with NHL life versus American Hockey League life that I've had to get used to doing with the young guys, because there's just so much more in terms of money and exposure, social media, more pitfalls, I think, too, right? So that part of it. You hope the players would do that, but that's what I would remind them. Like, you're truly young. You're just babies at 18 when you think about it. So,
do you remember those days when you were playing?
Well, I had a tough time because I tore my knee out at 19. We just won the Memorial Cup, so thought I had a real good chance in Chicago. So I remember them well, but they're all negative because of my constant rehab. They didn't fix it, repair my ACL, so I was constantly re-injuring it. So all I remembered was a lot of frustration at that age, not being able to do what you love to do. I mean, even playing in the minors, it wasn't so much, you missed a chance playing in the NHL, you're missing a chance to play, period. Mm-hmm. So that's the part I remember a lot about that age gap until it got squared away.
When did you start thinking about coaching?
Well, I would have been probably 29. I tore my other ACL, so I knew I was pretty much done.
I didn't know you did both.
Both, yeah. So I'm in the old IHL, which was going to become the merge with the American League, and I knew that, I got to find something else to do here. And I was a good student. I'd started a degree at Ottawa U. So it's either go back to school and finish or stay in the game you love. So what do you want to do? So I remember talking to Bob Murray. He was the GM of Chicago at the time. They were our affiliate. And he said, well, coaching it until you try it, you don't know. And it's hard to say who's going to be a good coach. But think about what you've done for us. Every year you're playing with the youngest guy. You room with the youngest guy, the first rounder. So you've been doing it even though you don't know you're doing it. And I thought through it a little bit and said, he's right. I had a good understanding of the game, so I'll give it a crack. So that it didn't come early. I never thought I'd be a coach. All they ever did was yell, yelling all the time.
Did you like your coaches?
I did.
You did?
I never not got along with a coach. Some of the best ones I played for were vocal. Brian Kilray was vocal. Daryl Sutter was vocal in his own way. Mm-hmm. I had one when I was 14 years old. I remember his name was Ray Owens, and he was loud, but I loved playing for him. Mm-hmm. And these guys didn't always direct it at me. They were just loud, that's how they coached. And a lot of guys did, I think, back then. It was kind of the way it was. So I said, that's not me. I'm a quiet guy. Sure enough, I got behind the bench, and all of a sudden I'm losing my, can I say it?
Absolutely.
And I'm on the refs they frustrate the crap out of the other referees. That's where you have to find your balance. It's like, you don't realize that part of the game when you're playing that much. It's like, because you're almost friends with them on the ice. Like, come on, right. Don, that was a kind of a cheap call, don't you think? But you're never that worked up about it, honestly. And as a coach, it's the opposite.
What was Julie's reaction when you wanted to coach?
When I started coaching, I hadn't met her.
Oh.
I met her in
Washington. So it was fine.
She was okay. I actually met her in Washington, D.C. when I was a coach.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Yep. So people used to say, oh, geez, that was a tough one, Washington. I said, listen, one of the best jobs in the world, in the best league in the world at that age. So, and I met my future wife there. So something good came out, other than, not a great record, but good experience. Some really good times in Washington. We made the playoffs. The team missed the year before. So I took some pride in that. We just didn't get it done the next year out of the gate. So, but... yeah, I don't think she knew anything what she was getting herself into in terms of the demands of the job or the intensity of, because she did not come from an athletic family. So this was all new to her. Just, the amount of drive you have to be a professional athlete and coach, like, you are consumed. It's just the way it is.
How are the kids with the transition from Boston and going through that? Because that, when I went through something, not as high profile as you, but that was a worry for me, was how my kids were going to find out and then telling them we were moving across the country.
Well, at first it was exciting.
Yeah.
Vegas, different lifestyle, warm weather, palm trees. Then when we got there, with the detaching from your friends at that age, the kids, that's when it hit them. You know, my daughter went to a school in Boston. It was called BBNN. It was in Cambridge. It was her first year there. And it was our first time at a private school. They did public in Winchester. And she really, really, like, hit a home run there. Her academics just soared. She met some of these friends that came to visit, I was telling you earlier, teachers. It just, she really took off. And so that was a difficult thing, pulling her out of that. Now, you know, we're at the school, the Meadows now in Vegas, which is a really strong academic school, and she's doing very well now. High honor student. We just found out last week. But the transition socially was tough for her. She missed a lot of her friends, and it was a difficult first 2 months. But, you know, we're a family. Like a lot of people, you just grind your way, right, and you get through it. And my son had a little easier time. He loves baseball, so he can play a lot more there year round. So, and he seemed to transition away from his friends a little bit easier. I don't know if that's a boy thing at that age. He's 12. Found a bunch in the neighborhood and just kept doing what he did with his other friends, you know, playing his Xbox, throwing the ball around, street hockey, whatever it is.
What's the vibe like around your team now as you work through this health part where you're getting guys back?
Well, the vibe is better now than I think it was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
We're excited to see Theodore back in the mix. Good chance to play tomorrow, if not very soon. Will Carrier was a shorter absent, but he's a glue guy to me. Will and Stoney, we really miss those guys that solidify their line, very predictable. And they've got personality. And Theo's been around since day one. So White Cloud skating again, you know. So you've got guys that have been there and done it a little bit. And it's I think for a team like ours, it's probably considered a veteran team, obviously. To see their veteran teammates back is a good sign for us. And we had some young kids come in and play well. Pahal, Korzak's been good. And Miro Manoff got hurt, unfortunately. So we're getting a little look at our depth, which is, I look at it as I'm a glass half full kind of guy. We get a good look at that if down the road we need those guys for the playoffs. But you want your horses back, right? I mean, we're getting to the point now it's going to be a push here coming out of the break for playoff positioning. To get in the playoffs, to win your division, all those things. All the teams start to get going here a little harder, and we need our guys healthy to do that.
What have you learned about your team through almost 50 games?
Well, you know, we've had some ups and downs. So I've learned that I think you can message to this group and they accept it. Like if it's, but you need to, okay, this is why we're doing it. This is what makes us good. And work through it with the video, and they respond well. I don't think they liked, like, their order or their routine thrown off a lot because they're a veteran group, so you mm-hmm. have to be careful. We had more of a younger mix, I think, in Boston, so you had to kind of coach two teams there, but yet you had the veteran guys to take care of those young guys here. It's more the veteran type, so we're trying to figure out everyone's fit in that regard and how to run your day-to-day practice length, meeting times. Whether to come into the rink or not on a back-to-back, like in Long Island, you know, that's a little different because we're not traveling. But just those little things that you used to just take for granted where you were previously that maybe were done differently. So I'm learning, you know, to make sure that consult with them so that we're on the same page. They want to be part of the decision-making in that regard. I'm learning they like each other a lot. I didn't know that at first because you don't – you're so – I'm trying to know my own staff.
Yeah.
Never mind – try to get to know every player. So there was a lot on the plate. Get to know how the medical team works. Equipment guys are equipment guys. They're some of the best guys you'll ever meet, hardest working guys. Usually no issues there. My GM I'd never worked for. So you've got a lot of newness. Getting my family settled when I walk through the doors, when I leave the rink, it's, you know, making sure my daughter's, you know, having a
it seems overwhelming.
Well, there was a lot going on at first to be able to, there's not enough hours in a day to literally get to build that, you know what I mean, to get to know everyone right away. It's been a process, but I'm getting there personally with the players a lot better now. I think it was first with the GM and coaching staff to sort of get on the same page. This is what we're going to do. This is what I see. I've always liked to communicate with, you know, my boss to say, hey, this is why we're doing this at training camp. This is how we're going to structure it, all those things. That has been a work, and it still is. So I'm still getting to know a lot of guys in our team, like getting that second and third and fourth layer of relationship now with Jack, for example, mm-hmm. you know, who's high profile guy. and Stoney, knowing that Stoney's a man of few words, right? You go with what you need, and that's it. And he's, there's no small talk, you know? He's like, but you, like, why are you hanging around? I'm like, okay, I get it.
Right, does he say
no,
but you can kind of see
feel that, right? Like, yeah. I want to get back with the guys. We talked about it. Petro, on the other hand, like, he's a little more chatty, right?
Yeah.
So those, you're digging a little deeper with the guys is what the process we're going through now. And I think it's good. And you sort of take it for granted when you're in one place for 5 years. You know, I got to know those guys very well, and inside and out, their family, their kids' names, all those little things that, you know, that can help you build, you know, a good solid foundation with them over time. We're still going through.
Is there a personality that you've thought, I didn't know about that? Like, you mentioned Will, like, he's a glue guy, and Will Carrier.
Yeah, I like Will a lot. I like the way he carries himself. He's tells it like it is. Paul Cotter, I'm learning, is a bit of the, I don't want to say, like, class clown, because that's a disrespectful term, but you know what I mean. He's the guy that seems to always have something going with everybody in the room, and
he can chirp,
yes,
and get away with it. Which not, I mean, your era, that didn't happen a lot.
No, that didn't fly. But that's what I notice about him. And it's not always the same guy. So he seems to have, I think he enjoys that part of it. He's going to go after and take it on the chin back, and he has, I think he has a good disposition to do it. He can laugh it off, and it's, you know, it's not going to bother him.
Did you know him at all?
No, not at all.
Because he told me at training camp that being his stall being in the main room was a major thing at training camp, because it told him, I might have an opportunity to make this team. And I don't know how much messaging you had to do with that or anything. But
no, well, I sat down, obviously, Krim and Von Karpen knew a lot of the...
Yeah.
He said, listen, Lashishan, Ron, Berg, and Cotter are three guys that have had some experience down in Henderson that would be closest to making the team. And from there, you know, everyone has a little bit of an opinion on how they all play, but let's see them play. They're all a little bit different. I thought Paul was ahead of the other two in certain areas out of camp. And then, like a lot of young guys, took a step back, and we worked with him. And I think he's been a real good player for us.
What's it like coaching Jack?
I'm still getting to know that, to be honest with you. I knew Jack a little bit from the days in Boston. Some of his friends were, we had mutual friends or people he worked with. So it's still, he can be guarded. I think we're on this exact same page when it comes to what we both want in the long run. I think Jack wants to be considered an excellent two-way player in this league with a playoff pedigree. And that's the path we're on. And that's the path we agreed that we'd try to stay on no matter what happened this year. Two-way player. Don't lose your defensive game. I think he's been one of our best defensive center.
You brought that up a couple of times.
I believe it. And, you know, when he closes quick, he makes good reads. For Jack, it's just finding the right chemistry. I think last year he played with a lot of different wingers. This year the same thing's happening because of injuries. So it would be nice if we could find him two guys, or at least one, that's consistent with him. It looked like him and Stevie and Stoney had something there, obviously, and then, you know, injuries happen. And Stevie, I do believe, prefers to play center, so, you know, that might not have been a permanent thing. But So I like working with Jack. I think there's a lot there. I think there's a guy that really cares and wants certain things out of his career. He's, you know, he's farther along than when he was when he first started in Buffalo. It's probably different things that are important to you. Going back to that talk when you're 18 years old, Now all of a sudden you're 26, 27, and you're seeing guys with families, and, you know, you're just at a different stage in your life. So it's easier to talk to guys, I think, like that about the big picture, what you want your legacy to be, you know, those type of conversations, as opposed to, hey, by the way, last night you should have shot a little more. Then, you know what I mean? Some of that stuff, it's deeper than that. And I think going back to your question earlier about what are you learning, that these are some of the things I'm learning because I'm able to get farther along now with certain players because, you know, it's just how a relationship naturally evolves, right?
How's the temperature? Do you need another log in the fire or anything?
No. Okay. No, I don't.
how is All-Star going to be different than the first time that you went through that as a coach at the NHL All-Star Weekend? What do you think you'll do differently?
It was all new to me, so my eyes were wide open. The one interesting thing was we lost to St. Louis in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, and the All-Star game was guess where the next year? Lovely St. Louis.
Right.
And the fans are giving it to him. Like, you guys won. Why are you mad at me? I don't understand that. You guys won.
Yeah.
you know? And it wasn't like I was, you know, like it's St. Louis, Chicago, that rivalry forever. It's, yeah. You know, so anyway, so that was a little annoying being around that rink after, you know, we lost. But I thought it was, for the guys I met, it's funny, I met Max there, Pacioretty, because he had young kids and my kids were a little younger then and they were still into knee hockey a little bit. Shea Weber had some, you know, so you're meeting guys with families as opposed to maybe the younger guys because there was a great family. So I thought it was cool to meet these players and their parents, just different people, and how truly normal hockey people are. Like, just seem like they're down to earth. And that's the part I enjoyed the most, getting to know them away from the rink a little bit, these players. My kids loved it, so it's great memories for them. So this time around, I'm going to make sure they get to take in every minute of what, you know, they're allowed to do on the bench during the skills. Now they did a lot of that, asked for pictures with, you know, Connor McDavid and McKinnon and everybody, and make sure they do that because the opportunity might never come again, right? Mm-hmm. And to be face to face with you, and they both play hockey, my kids. So that's the part I'm going to make sure. Other than that, you know, it's a laid back experience. We don't do much as coaches there. We really don't, you know, I don't even know if we get to put the lines together. I think the media's already put their two cents in and who should play with
you.
You're
going to play Connor and Leon together?
I think I will.
Yeah.
I'll just ask them. Honestly, I'll go in the room and say, you guys, previous relationships, good or bad, so I can separate or put you together? Or do you want to throw names in the hat or what? Yeah. I mean, I always have an idea, but, I mean, you got nine elite players, right?
Yeah.
So does it matter? So they'll decide that. I just get to pick the starting goalie, and, well, it's got to be Logan, right?
First ballot right there. Previous relationships is a good one because I'm sure some All-Star games have been.
Well, Kadri's there, right?
Right.
So when I'm in Boston, he's in Toronto. I mean, we went at it pretty good.
Yeah.
And certainly not, you know, he that's not going to affect me and him. But if, you know, if there was a Bruin on his team, it might, you know,
right.
affect it. Right. So now he's moved to Calgary. So I don't know how him and. Was he Colorado last year? Edmonton in the series last year. If there's a lot of bad blood between
and now he's Calgary, Edmonton,
him and Draisaitl. Yeah, you know, and McDavid. If something's already happened this year, I'll have to get on the horn with Daryl and say, "Who do you want me to play Kadri with?"
You, well,
you want me to have him start firing pucks at McDavid and Draisaitl. You know, like so it's funny, like. You know, but I guess they've been doing these All-Star games since the beginning of time, so I assume all these guys have previous relationships. But sometimes you get those players that are, you know, who knows, like a Tkachuk of the world, you know, that annoys people, maybe wants to do it at the All-Star game too. I don't know. Remember, wasn't it Pete Rose that barreled into the catcher?
Yes.
So, you know, you might have one of those moments. You know.
What's the name of the catcher?
Ray Fosse, right?
Yeah, Oakland, exactly.
Is it Oakland A's or?
Yes. You know. Good call.
I told you I like baseball.
And history, it's good. Will you let Rod Brind'Amour hang out with you guys in this little shuffling of chairs with you and Monty and Pete?
We'll see. Rod will be running up and down the gym.
You're right. Yes.
Lifting weights. And like we're doing some, I was told we've got to do this interview on the beach. And it's like, listen, me and Pete have already decided we are keeping our shirts on no matter what Rod decides. If he's taking his off, God bless him. I think Monty's going to keep his on too. So anyway. Yeah, that is a little interesting.
It's the most bizarre, interesting turn of events that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
an All-Star.
We're all going to complain about something from the previous stop. Yeah. It's never going to be nonstop.
Yeah. The previous coach.
Just going to go like around in circles, you know?
But you know Pete, I don't know how well you know Monty, but you and Monty did talk. He told us on this podcast how he reached out to you.
I talked to Monty probably two or three times. I think... Once I left there,
and you were able to be fine with that.
Oh, it doesn't like I'm gone, so someone has to get the job.
So I'm so much more petty than you.
That part would never bother me unless someone went behind your back in there. Mm. You know what I mean? I was obviously rooting for Joe Sacco because I worked with him for 6 years, so I was hoping Joe would get the job. It didn't work out. So, but Monty asked me during the interview process a couple of things. So, I mean, I think if the shoe was on the other foot, I got to believe he would have done the same thing for me, and most guys would. I mean, I talked to Pete, maybe not right away, but about Vegas. Mm-hmm. Someone else called me about Boston, interviewed. I didn't even know him that well, but I certainly gave him my two cents on what I thought would help him. Mm-hmm. I didn't go through what why it doesn't work or this or that, but here, you know, here's some areas you probably want to focus on and where the team's very good and where they are going to tell you they want some improvements and go from there.
Good for you. Thanks for doing this. Hopefully get up for a ride at some point.
Yeah, no, I enjoy a fireside chat, just like what was Churchill's dog's name? Roosevelt. Churchill had his dog by his side all the time, you know, back in the day, and he had his cigar. That's what we're missing.
I love Winston Churchill stuff, like books, movies, anything Winston Churchill. But you got to be the right character to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, I think so.
I can't pull off that kind of stuff. Thanks, Butch. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it. Yes, we'll get out on our bikes and rip around like two
50-year-olds.
That we are, yeah. You fill in the number.
Well, a couple of things to play off there. One, how much do we owe for this room? Is it on us? Okay. Well, we got to sneak out the side door because this was really cool. The view of this hotel on like the 25th floor of the Equinox Hotel. For Bruce, he's not making lines at the NHL All-Star Game coming up, so that's up to the players. Do Leon and Connor want to play together, or do they want the experience of playing with somebody else? And that whole Nazem Kadri thing, I never thought of that. Like, maybe some players have bad vibes with each other. Like, Naz gets under your skin out there. Matthew Tkachuk, you could see that rubbing people the wrong way with his division. So different players along that line. I'm looking forward to Josh Morrissey being in the All-Star game, to be quite honest. He was with us a couple of episodes ago. That was really cool to converse with him and see the growth in his game. And now going to the All-Star game, having this career year. Pumped up about seeing Josh Morrissey, or Josh Norrissey, as they call him. And the Metropolitan Division, the idea of Ovi and Sid being on the same line, just let it happen all day long. And those two guys, they play together against each other right before the NHL All-Star Game. So cool stuff. And also, when it comes to playoff races, keep this in mind. We got three of the four divisions rocking it right now. So coming out of the NHL All-Star Weekend, it is going to be full speed ahead. I'd love to hang out and chat with you, but I got to get it back on the bike and do some training. Because if you think that I'm going to go into it without top fitness, biking with Bruce, like, is there pressure there? Should there be pressure biking with the head coach? I think there is. Thanks to Bob Bender for making this happen in Manhattan, Hudson Yards. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next time on The Chirp with Darren Millard.